This is the Hidden Wire Podcast, episode 514, with Dr. Brian Boxer Walker.
Never do anything you wouldn't want on the front page of the newspaper.
G'day, 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 and welcome to the Hidden Wire Podcast. How the heck are you? Hope you're well, guys. My name is Lee Monalty, the host of the show, and today I have a cracker of an interview to bring to you. It is with Dr. Brian Boxer Walker. So Dr. Brian has pioneered treatments in vision correction, has published more than 100 scientific peer-reviewed journal papers and book chapters, and is the first choice by many doctors for their own eye treatment. In his new book, Perceptual Intelligence, he offers a fascinating, accessible description of how we see what we see and why this affects every aspect of our lives. And this forms the basis of our discussion for this interview. So it's an interesting interview. We talk about the definition of perceptual intelligence and how it really can help us understand and distinguish fantasy from reality and really help us find and enjoy a more fulfilling, meaningful lifestyle. Anyway, that's the gist of it. I hope you enjoy it, guys. Check it out and let me know what you think. Jump onto thehiddenwire.com. This is episode 514 with Dr. Brian Boxer Walker. You can leave your comments in the comments fields there. You can reach Brian through the show notes and the links there. You can also pick up a copy of this book if it sounds of interest through the show notes. That helps support the show. And let me know what you think as well, guys. Just leave your comments or reach me directly through Facebook, preferably, or by email address as well. I would love to connect and hear your thoughts. If you enjoy this episode, guys, or any of the episodes, please do me a favor, share the love, share it with your family, share it with your friends. That'd be huge. And we'll chat at the other end. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the show. Here is Dr. Brian Boxer Walker. Dr. Brian, welcome to the Hidden Wire Podcast. How are you going?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. Thank you very much, mate. Look forward to our chat today. I want to discuss your new book, which is called Perceptual Intelligence. So perhaps talk to us a little bit about yourself, Brian. What is your passion in life? You've got a very unique background and diverse background, but fill us in.
I grew up in California. I'm from Santa Monica, part of Los Angeles. And I went to school here, went to college at UCLA.
Yep.
And then I went to medical school. Actually, before that, I took a year off. I was really disenchanted with Los Angeles. I felt a little like the character Holden Caulfield in Catcher in the Rye, the classic book, and thought everybody was a phony and wanted to get as far away from here as possible. So I actually was lucky enough to get a scholarship to study at Edinburgh University in Scotland for a year.
That's cool.
And it was a life-changing experience to know that there's a world outside of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And then I did medical school on the East Coast at Dartmouth and did my ophthalmology training in St. Louis and Kansas City, and then actually came back to Los Angeles, warmed up and realized that not everybody's a phony, and came back and started my career here.
Okay, and that's led you to writing this book.
Yes. Oh, and of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that I'm married, and I'm married to Selena. She's from Vancouver, Canada, and we've been married for 24 years, and we have twin daughters who are 11 years old now.
Oh, the joy. Cool stuff, mate. So talk to us about this book. Why did you decide to write this book? And what's the key theme?
Well, perceptual intelligence, the concept of why I wrote the book, really I have to take you back to when I was in sixth grade in primary elementary school, where I secretly checked out from the library the Judy Blume classic, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And I was just curious on how the mind of the other sex works. So I always had this curiosity about how our brains work in psychology. And that's why in college at UCLA, I was a psychobiology major, which is a combination of psychology and biology. And then what really inspired me to write Perceptual Intelligence was when in 2014, I was at the Sochi Olympics in Russia, and I was there for moral support for my patient and dear friend, Stephen Holcomb, who's the U.S. gold medal winning bobsledder.
Yep.
And I treated a condition of his eyes called keratoconus, which is where the cornea bulges out and causes a lot of distortions. Hmm. I had developed these procedures to treat keratoconus and prevent people from needing a cornea transplant. And that's what I did with Steven and restored his vision. And that's when he started bobsledding and when he won his gold medal in Vancouver in 2010 at the Olympics there. So,
yeah, wow.
So fast forward, I'm here in Sochi, and I witnessed Stephen winning more than two bronze medals at the Olympics there in 2014. But I also saw how Vladimir Putin was manipulating the world's perception of himself compared to what he was really doing.
Yeah.
And that's when I started writing.
Right. Interesting. I just watched the documentary Icarus.
Right. Yes. I have to watch that. People have been mentioning that a lot.
Which refers to that. Yeah. Very interesting. So, the key theme to the book is how our perception influences what is real and what is not, influences our, I guess, the fundamentals of our reality as we see it.
It's almost, in a way, you can think of, are we really living in a matrix? Is everything that we think we see and read and experience, is it real? And it really depends on how our brains perceive it. So the definition of perceptual intelligence is how we interpret our experiences to separate fantasy from reality. In a way, it's like having a built-in BS detector in our heads, and that can allow us to make better, smarter decisions in our life. But that's not always easy, because there's lots of factors. If we have good critical thinking skills, that definitely helps, because if you have high perceptual intelligence and you can understand what's real and not real, you're going to have well-developed critical thinking skills. But there's so many factors that make that a challenge for us in daily life. Number one being emotions, because when emotions are tied to beliefs, it can lead people to make bad decisions.
Yep.
Or if there's different cultural upbringings, parenting upbringings, religion can affect how we view things through a filter if we have strong religious beliefs. And we'll talk about some very funny stories, too, regarding religion and how that's affected people. And even the DNA in our psychology. So there's so many things that can make it a real challenge for us to make good decisions in life.
Absolutely. It's quite a unique experience, and I hear a lot of people referring to life like the Matrix. You know, are we living in the Matrix? Now, how we interpret our experience, I believe, according to your work, it's based really on our senses, isn't it? The five senses.
It definitely is, and the number one is what we see, because so many people are watching TV, they're reading on the internet articles or on social media, Facebook and other areas. And also when you're listening to news or listening to stories. So those are the main senses that can definitely trick us and think that we're interpreting something correctly when in fact we're really not.
So sight, sound, taste, smell.
Usually, you know, it's hard these days to be like tasting, you know, information, although there is a neurological condition where people, you know, can taste things that they see and vice versa. So, but for most people, that's not the case.
Well, there's a link between taste and smell as well, isn't there?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
So you're really talking about sight and sound, things that the information that we consume and how that affects how that affects our interpretation of the reality we live.
Those are the main senses, because it's almost like, you know, our minds are a big Vitamix blender, and so much stuff is getting stuffed into there through what we see and what we hear. So it's up to us to be able to really take out, you know, out of that Vitamix, what's really the high quality product that's healthy for us. You know, if we make that analogy, like it's organic, it's nutritious, it's not full of harmful ingredients, and that's what happens in our brain, and that's why having the information in the book is so helpful to so many people, because it's like a lot of light bulbs start going off when they start learning things that they didn't even know that they were capable of doing and their brain was capable of doing, and that's very empowering for people.
So what, I mean, our mind is really connected to these physical senses, and that is really how we gather and interpret information, and that's based on all our past experience. And I guess you probably relate to the constructionist theory of the brain and the mind, and how that then creates the reality that we live. Yeah,
there is. It's in a way, our mind is different than the brain. We can dissect the brain. We can image the brain, MRI scans. We can do thin slices, look at it under a microscope, but what is really the mind? Mm. We really don't have a tool to measure what the mind is, what somebody's thoughts are.
Can't really dissect it.
Exactly. We don't have that technology. Of course, it exists, but it's there for sure. And that's the other component. And that's what makes this so interesting for me and why I was so fascinated, even as a, you know, sixth grader checking out this book from Judy Blume, because I was just always interested in how people think and what affects thinking and how our brains work.
Well, that's the same with the concept of self. You know, we can all resonate with a sense of self. Yeah, what is the self, and how does it exist? How do we dissect it?
Exactly.
That is just a thing of the mind, isn't it, really?
It is. Very important part, but if you really stop and think about it, for something so universal to every living being, not just humans, we really have no way to measure what the mind and the thoughts are, aside from electrical activity, but that really doesn't describe, you know, what somebody's mind is, truly their mind and their personality and their thoughts. So I'm sure eventually we'll have the technology, but it's fascinating how this affects so many things in our real world. And marketing is a prime example where people can get influenced because of areas that are not functioning properly in how they're interpreting information. And I'll give you a very interesting example from marketing. There's an actress, Jamie Lee Curtis. She's very highly trusted from a consumer point of view. She ranks high on the Celebrity Trust Index. And there's actually an index that ranks celebrities. And Tom Hanks has been number one for many, many years. And if we have time, I'll tell you a funny story about Tom Hanks later.
Yeah.
But
I'd like to hear it.
So Jamie Lee Curtis was doing commercials for a yogurt company. It was called Activia Yogurt. Uh-huh. Now, the problem was that the company's claim of improved digestion was false. And this came out later. But what happened, she's doing these commercials and people went out and bought a whole lot of this yogurt expecting a benefit of improved digestion. And it was where, in this case, a celebrity and a company together hijacked the perceptual intelligence of a lot of people who went out and bought the yogurt. So this occurs because of what's called the halo effect that celebrities have. Yeah. And it's really not even celebrities. Anybody that has people who admire them, that creates this halo effect, which means that if they say or endorse or speak or write about something that's outside of what they're known for, a number of people will still listen to that with the same level of authority as if it came from somebody who truly is an expert in that area. And that's the halo effect. Uh-huh. And, you know, we see that right now there's an explosion of news stories about sexual misconduct. And that's occurring because of the halo effect that people in power had over their subordinates. Mm-hmm. And that led them to take advantage of women because of their halo effect. And people, when they understand that, number one, celebrities or people who are in power or people who are just admired widely have a halo effect, that can be very empowering. And I think what we're seeing now is this huge awareness and dialogue because of all the media stories. It's just been this explosion, like unlike anything we've ever seen in history. And so it's creating a dialogue awareness so that, for example, women who may have otherwise fallen for somebody because of their halo effect now are more empowered to realize, no, that's wrong what you're doing, and be comfortable reporting it because so many other people are being vocal about this. But it's also educating a lot of men too and improving their perceptual intelligence to think twice about taking advantage of their halo effect with people too.
Okay. And what is this? Sorry, did you want to mention that story of Tom Hanks?
Oh, yes. So when I was in college, I was on a date and I had an old car that my mom had, a 1958 Nash Metropolitan. It's an old little 50s car. It was black and white. And actually, I still have it. But I was on a date and it was in the 80s and the car broke down. And I was out pushing the back of the car. I asked my date to steer it and it was a stick shift. So there's something called bump starting where you release the clutch when you get enough momentum and then it starts the car up. So I was pushing it, and then I suddenly hear, it's in a residential area in Westwood, which is an area in Los Angeles, and I hear somebody say, "Hey, hold on, I'll come help you." So I look over my shoulder, and I see sprinting across these front yards of the houses is Tom Hanks. And he comes, pushes the other, he jumps on the other side of the taillight from me, and he kind of has that sort of like amazed look and says, "Cool car." And so he helps push it, and we get the car started, and he's like, "Okay, bye." And just see, I'm like, "Thanks." And he just like ran up, you know, from where he came from. And I told my date that, and she was just like amazed. But truly, somebody who is so, was so incredibly helpful and giving. And he was already a well-known celebrity at that point. He had already done like his TV show, and also had done Splash, which was a very big film, and I think Big even by then too.
Yeah.
So, but he was just very down to earth and just like a helpful person, you know, in the neighborhood that just came to help. And you know, that was just a amazing story of somebody who just truly is a gem of a person.
That's nice to hear those stories, isn't it? It really shows that you know, a lot of people that make good success have, you know, genuine good reason for it, I suppose. Yeah,
and down to earth still.
Down to earth.
So very deserving.
Well, down to earth and giving, you know, and thoughtful of others.
Yeah, very deserving of being number one on the trust index.
Yeah, sure. Cool. So look, let's talk about how we can better understand perceptual intelligence in our own lives and get a grip of it, so we can. I suppose, I don't know if I'm wrong in saying this, but I suppose it means trying to create a reality that's more conducive to the life we want to live.
Right. So I think when people can understand, and the book Information does help people through walking through the process, when people, first of all, can understand that everything that we are listening to and watching, a lot of times there is a angle, something, even if it's just information that's trying to be sold to you, not even products or services. And when we understand too that if it's tempting us because of it's tapping into an emotional want or need, and we recognize that, like for example, there's a story of a website called The Onion. It's a comedy website. And they put out a joke press release. And it stated that Johnson & Johnson, the makers of Visine eye drops that get the white out, they get the red out, have come out now with eye whitening strips. And people started calling the company asking, "Where can I buy these strips?" And the company said, "We don't make them." Then people started calling my office because I developed an eye whitening procedure. And my staff said, "This doesn't exist." Well, then some people said, "Can I just buy the Crest teeth whitening strips and put those in my eyes?" And they said, no, that's dangerous. But this makes the point that when somebody has an emotional want and need, and believe me, people who have discolored eyes, and we actually have people who come from Australia as well for this procedure because of the intense sun there, they have a real issue psychologically, because people think when their eyes get red chronically because of sun damage, or they have brown spots on the eyes or yellow spots, other people think they're on drugs, they're chronically tired, they're high, they are sick, and they keep asking them questions, and people's self-esteem takes a real hit, and their self-confidence, and most people have no idea what these types of, you know, conditions cause, especially most eye doctors. They just tell people you got to live with it. So this is a real emotional need. So here you had a joke press release from a well-known comedy website lead people to grasp that that could be something real because of the emotional connection that it tapped into. So when we recognize, when people recognize that there are emotions behind decisions, that can at least give them a pause when they recognize that to evaluate and see, okay, is this something that's really valid? Is it true or is it not true? Because that's our goal, is we want people to have more mindfulness and an insight to be able to make better decisions in their life. And it's not always easy. I mean, when our emotions are involved, I mean, there's so many bad things that happen because of emotional-based decisions in life. You look at the news and, you know, somebody goes postal. I mean, this is because of emotions. And it's not always easy to be able to do this, but it can be done in a much better way, and that's what the book helps people with.
Okay, so the emotions, they arise sort of from how we feel based on some sort of biological process that's going on at the moment?
Right.
Is that right?
It is, because emotions are the result of how we're feeling about a situation, and that is from various reasons. It could be from how we were raised, things that caused problems psychologically at one point in somebody's life, or that there is something that they want and need because there's a problem they want to solve. And if they want to solve it very desperately, that increases that emotional action.
There's some link here, isn't there? Like, from how we feel back to our evolutionary need for survival, that all links together. But sometimes the emotions that are created from our feelings perhaps are interpreted incorrectly as well. Is there a case for that? Like, where we just interpret how we're feeling and create emotions incorrectly based on whatever it might be, experience in the past?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, people can misinterpret information and interactions all the time. So, I mean, you could be, you know, standing in line and somebody turns around in front of you and gives you a look that you perceive as being rude and odd.
Yeah.
But it could be because the person heard something drop in the aisle behind you in the checkout line and was looking to see if something was wrong out of concern. And, you know, you may have felt threatened because they turned around and looked at you and you felt that they were looking at you in an odd way.
Yeah, you didn't make the connection.
Yeah, so people misinterpret other people's situations, reactions, appearances, all the time.
Well, that's kind of, I mean, that's a case of misinterpreting the environment that we're in the moment. But there's also the case of, misinterpreting how we're feeling, what the real feeling is that we're relating these emotions to. You know, it might be a feeling of hunger, yet we're thinking it's something else entirely based on our current situation in life. And then that then obviously corresponds to the emotion that we bring up and how we behave,
It certainly can.
Which I guess is similar to what you just said about the example in the shopping aisle, you know, how we respond or react to our environments like that as well, where we misinterpret what's actually happening. And that's just based on what's fact and what's not, what's perception.
Right. And then there's a strong example that some people I'm sure can relate to is if people are feeling anxious, then to satisfy that anxiety, they start eating.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not really the right way to diffuse anxiety, but for a lot of people, that is something that makes them feel better, even though it's truly not addressing what is causing them to be anxious in the first place.
We go towards misdirect. Some sort of thing that we think will provide us a relief, yet actually isn't the, I guess, the proper method of providing the release.
Right. So there's disconnect in certain emotions like that all the time, too.
So, look, it sounds like, I mean, the fundamental process to becoming more perceptually intelligent or raising our PI is through awareness and mindfulness. Is that right?
It is. And when you can do that and you can catch yourself before you go off the rails, then you have an opportunity to think critically about a situation or information.
Yeah.
And you also have to consider the source, too, of the information, because if you're reading something on the internet or something from a well-known newspaper or magazine like The Economist, it's very different than your Uncle Jim who's tweeting out conspiracy theories. So the source is also important in terms of the credibility of where information is coming from.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a, I'm going to come back to marketing too, because we experience this constantly. And there is a concept of reciprocation, where when you get something from somebody, you feel psychologically guilty if you don't reciprocate back.
Yeah.
And there was one experiment was done where people, the experimenter sent out Christmas cards or holiday cards to totally unknown people, to strangers they got out of the yellow pages of the phone book. And a number of those people sent back holiday cards because they got a holiday card, even though they had, it was a total stranger that sent them the holiday card, because they felt they needed to reciprocate back. So this is a very strong emotional experience that people have, and it can hijack your judgment and perceptual intelligence. And salespeople use this very frequently. So if you ever gone into buy a car and you start going around the dealership looking at cars, the salesperson isn't pouring you unlimited coffee refills because he or she feels bad you look so sleepy. It's because they are giving you something and it's a nominal fee, hoping in return you'll put a down payment of a few thousand dollars on a car. Mm. And that's the other thing about reciprocation, is it's not proportional. So even though the coffee may have cost, you know, 50 cents, what you do back in return could be thousands of dollars. Yeah. So it's never, doesn't have to be proportional to satisfy that psychological need. So in the chapter on reciprocation in the book Perceptual Intelligence, people will learn how to spot these types of tactics so they can help be bulletproof against them, so that they're not buying things that they really don't intend to buy.
Yeah, that's a huge huge benefit to know these tactics that marketers use. And certainly I benefit from reading the book Influence as well.
That's right, Robert Cialdini.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that certainly opened my eyes to a lot of these I don't know if they're tricks, but they're just methods of sales. And it's certainly beneficial to know those. I'm really interested in how we create our own self-deception, you know, the deception that's created in the mind to influence us to behave in certain ways. And I don't know if you can share any sort of practical thoughts on how we can become more aware of that, other than, you know, through a mindfulness practice and just assessing and reflecting what our own thoughts and emotions are at any given moment, so we can therefore better navigate us forward. But are there any other things that you'd like to add to that?
There's a great example of self-deception. It's a really funny story. And people who are really big coffee lovers are always going to seek out really good coffee and be willing to pay for it. Well, there's a coffee called Kopi Luwak coffee. And I don't know if you've heard of it. It sounds very exotic. And it's made from coffee beans in Indonesia that fall on the ground and are eaten by a very special type of cat.
Yep.
And it passes through the cat undigested and comes out the back end. And somebody's got that job of picking out those beans and cleaning them. And the story is that these cats have a near magical ability to pick the very best beans, which makes this amazing coffee.
Yeah.
That's why people are paying upwards of $100 a cup for it.
Incredible.
Now, the reality is the coffee is good, but it's not going to knock your socks off. But this is how the self-deception of, I'm drinking this really special coffee because it's got this amazing story, almost unbelievable story, is deceiving the people into believing that I'm drinking something that is worth what I'm paying for. And they're deceiving themselves because, and I've talked to two different coffee experts, and that's the information that they've said, is that it's good coffee, but it's definitely not like this amazing, you know, walk on water type coffee.
Yeah.
Right.
It's the same with like nice quality wine or something like that too. You know, people can spend thousands on good wine, but is it really that good? And is it just a perception?
Right. And it's just another example how marketing stories in marketing, they sell. Stories sell. And that's what helps separate what would normally be a commodity. Coffee is, you know, being a commodity for the most part, to being a premium product like the Ferrari of coffees.
And I guess those stories really
without the Ferrari performance, I might add.
I suppose those stories really link to the connection of how we can fulfill our own needs as well. Like, I mean, obviously having that special cup of coffee, I wouldn't be caught dead paying, well, I don't think I would anyway, paying $100 for a cup of coffee. But you know, I know a lot of people might, just for that need to fulfill some sort of sense of belonging or self-worth or whatever it might be. I guess it all links back to that at the end of the day as well, that fulfilling of the fundamental human need.
And for some people, they want to be able to have bragging rights, to be at a party or a cocktail party and say, you know, I just spent $100 on Kopi Luwak coffee, and boy, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to spellbound an audience. There's people who want and need to be able to do that.
Yeah. And well, again, that's just our need to, you know, be in that inner crowd, isn't it? To be involved, to be a part of something, to have some sort of sense of self-worth.
And for some people, I think for sure, definitely for sure. And, you know, there's another example of how people can deceive themselves because of religion.
Yeah.
And there are a number of people who believe they've seen the Virgin Mary in a number of very unusual places. Mm-hmm. And it's because of a condition called pareidolia, uh-huh. which is something actually we've all experienced. So have you ever looked up in the clouds and seen a human face?
Yeah, I've actually got a tree in the backyard here that I've looked at, and it's been there for 12 months now, and it looks like an image of my brother.
So, okay. So we're all trained because as babies, we're ingrained in our brains of seeing human faces from the doting, you know, faces of our parents.
Yeah.
So people, though, with strong religious upbringing or that have just developed a very strong faith later in life, they are primed to see the likes of the Virgin Mary in the skillet burns of a grilled cheese sandwich and pay $18,000 for it.
Yeah, wow.
And because they believe that's the Virgin Mary.
Yeah.
So, by the way, this is not just the domain of the Virgin Mary. There have been a number of Jesus sightings too, including on a Cheeto. You know the chips Cheetos?
Yeah, I'm not that familiar with them, but I know them. Yep.
All right, it's a chip called Cheetos, and he's been seen on a Cheeto, or Cheeses, if you prefer.
interesting stuff. What parts of the book do you think are worth mentioning before we move into the final questions of the interview?
Well, there's a great chapter on sex, I might add, and
I did read that. Yeah, what's that all about?
Well, it's about how we perceive human sexuality in many different ways, and including fantasy and people with other sexual orientations and why people think that. And, you know, one of my favorite stories is the history of the chastity belt that's discussed. And you probably have an idea what you think the chastity belt was for, right? The chastity belt?
No. Explain it.
Okay. Well, the chastity belt was believed to be this harness that the knights made their fair maidens wear before they went off to battle to protect their virginity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the true story of the chastity belt is that it was not for that at all. It was developed by doctors in the United States in the early 1900s for teenage boys to prevent them from pleasuring themselves. Mm-hmm. Because at that time, religion was so strong that it infiltrated even the medical circles, and doctors believed that masturbation was in teenage boys increased the risk of them having psychiatric problems later in life, or heart disease even, and other medical problems. So we had these teenage parents bringing their boys to the doctor saying, you know, please do something, and they were prescribing these chastity belts to the boys to wear. And you know that, and that's because, again, of religion. In the Bible, there's a story of Onan, King Onan, who spilled his seed. And ever since then, millions of people in countries all over the world have believed that this was a sin to do, when in fact it's very biological. And I have to say, at the turn of the century, there was one person back then who did have high PI in this area. And it was the very famous American writer who wrote Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer, Mark Twain. And I want to read a very humorous story here about Mark Twain. So he gave in 1879 a speech in Paris to an elite group of French intellects. And it's now a short book called Mark Twain on Masturbation. And he presented his entertaining and modified quotes from historic figures and joked that in the second book of the Iliad, Homer wrote, "Give me masturbation or give me death." And a Zulu hero named Cetewayo said, "A jerk in the hand is worth two in the bush." So you can imagine, if we think these lines are funny today, imagine what people thought of them back in 1879. So, but it's again where he was able to separate the reality from fantasy, and he had PI, I would say, of the highest Jedi Knight order back then. And medical studies now have shown, in fact, that this is not harmful. It's actually healthy, because it's been proven in a number of medical studies to reduce the risk of prostate cancer.
Right. Mm, makes sense. So what are the benefits of all this? I'm sort of developing my own sort of ideas around the possible outcomes and benefits of reading your book. But what do you see as the main takeaways from this idea that you're sharing, and how it could benefit not us individually necessarily, but the collective state of society?
I think when people have the information in this book, they elevate their game so they can have what they want in life, whether it's better job, better relationships, better sex, more success, more happiness. Without the information in the book, people have a hard time achieving these things because they keep repeating the same patterns. So that's why the information here is so powerful, because it can elevate the potential success for someone in every area in their life.
Yeah. I sort of feel that it could help us dissolve the level of suffering that we might create in our lives from our misperceptions of the reality that we're living.
Definitely.
Society. Look, fantastic. I'm going to stick the book in the show notes. Again, the book title, and let me just get this very much correct. It's called Perceptual Intelligence, The Brain's Secret to Seeing Past Illusion, Misconception, and Self-Deception. So it is available online at Amazon. I'll stick the book in the links at the show notes at thehiddenwhy.com, episode 514. So check that out there, guys, and pick up a copy if you're interested. Hey, I've got a few more questions, Dr. Brian. Can you stick around for these? It's a few fast round questions.
Oh, of course. Happy to.
Awesome. So the first one is, what are your routines or rituals that you believe contribute to your success?
I would say being physically active is really important, at least for me, and I think for a lot of people. I've always been into sports, and even in high school, I ran on the track team. I did hurdles and lots of other track-related events. And then in college, I rode on the rowing team or the crew team. And then it was about 20 years before I got back into exercising on the water. I was doing lots of gym exercising and on the rowing machine and weights. And I've gotten back on the water about 7 years ago. So I've been rowing again, sculling, which is being in a boat by yourself with the two oars, and racing. And I've really enjoyed it. So I think having something that you enjoy doing physically that takes you out of your daily routine is really important, because it gives your mind space to breathe and just to be open and have different experiences and stimuli. So I think exercise is important. Plus, it's been shown to reduce stress and reduce anxiety. And there's a gazillion studies that have shown it improves health and reduces the risk of virtually every disease. So that's really important also. And then part of my routine too is spending time with my family. I have twin daughters who are 11 years old now. And even though I have a very busy practice, I spend time as much as I can with them, because I know it's a perishable opportunity. As they get older, then they're going to not want to hang out with mom and dad so much, to hang out with their friends more. So I've taken the opportunity and cut back a little bit when I was coaching on one of my daughters on the basketball team for 3 years on the recreational center basketball team. And that was a great experience too. So just trying to spend as much time as I can with the family is also part of my routine. And I'm a big reader. I like to read books, and books outside of my area of expertise, because again, it's another way to let my mind breathe and learn new information. And
yeah.
That's why I think books are so important, whether they're...
Develop your PI.
Yeah.
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 What advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
Gosh. It's funny you say that, because normally I would advise younger people. I thought that's where you were going with the question. What would I advise, like, if somebody who's 20, a 20-year-old? But I want to make the point, because I think it's an important one to mention. We've been talking mostly about the analytical aspects of perceptual intelligence, but there's a whole other topic about intuition and gut feelings. And that's the marriage of analytical and critical thinking that makes really perceptual intelligence, because we get ideas, we get gut feelings all the time, and a lot of people don't really pay any attention to them because it's not something that they're ever really educated on. But as it turns out, and studies have borne this out, that a lot of times the gut feelings or intuition you get, or just ideas that come to you in the middle of the night when you're waking up or going to sleep, you should pay attention to those and evaluate them, because more often than not, they may be leading you in a good, better direction about something, even though you can't explain it.
Hmm.
So it's really the opposite side of the spectrum from the analytical and the critical thinking. But that's also perceptual intelligence too. And so as a 20-year-old, I was already dialed in and aware of my intuition. And I'll tell you a story. When I was in college, after I got done rowing, I was on the debate team, the speech and debate team. And we were driving from a tournament in a station wagon on the freeway or the highway. And normally I always wore my seatbelt, but this was a situation where it was an older station wagon with those bench seats, and the seatbelts were just wedged in there. And it was really hard for me to get the seatbelt out. So I was just going along, you know, down the freeway with everyone packed into the station wagon. It was a kind of a school station wagon for the team.
Yep.
And then some idea just kind of came to me of, like, where my seatbelt? And I thought, okay, let me make the effort, you know, digging in between those, you know, cheeks of the seat to squeeze out the seatbelt. And finally I got it out and I put it on. Literally no more than 30 seconds later, a tire popped and the whole station wagon started spinning around on the freeway, and we went off into a ditch.
Yeah.
And had I not worn that seatbelt, at the least I would have been spun around like loose change in a washing machine. And at the worst, I would have been ejected from the window.
Yeah.
So that's an example of how listening to your gut feeling can be really important.
Quite beneficial, yeah.
And so, yeah, that's, I think, an important message too for people about perceptual intelligence.
Absolutely. Okay. And what is your meaning of success?
I think to be happy in life and to do good for other people. I wrote an article on a Huffington Post website, which is a popular news website here. And it was about what the meaning of life is.
Yeah.
And I went through a little bit of like a Socratic method to prove, as best as you could prove through supporting arguments, that the meaning of life is to do good. And to me, the more I can do good, that's the more success I have in life, to be able to help people.
Yeah.
And even something as simple as once a week on the way to the boathouse to row, I always carry bags of new socks in my car, in my trunk, and I'll stop by this one area once a week where there's homeless people, and I always give out socks in person to the homeless people anonymously. And that's just another very small thing that I do to try to help make things better for people and to do good.
That's nice. Okay, and what's one bit of productivity advice you might be able to share?
What type of advice?
Productivity advice.
Productivity is, make sure when you're working, nowadays there's so many distractions, and you need to recognize, and you'll catch yourself doing this, but if you're working at your computer and you have the sound on and you have an email come in, what's the sound you normally hear?
I don't know, ding.
Ding, right. And then what are you tempted to do? Turn around and look at your computer.
Absolutely, yeah.
Who just emailed me? So I think to be highly productive, you need to disconnect or turn off electronics, or at least turn the sound off as much as you can.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard these days for people to be truly productive because their phone goes off, or they get a text and their phone gets a same sort of bing or vibrates, and turn off the sound for notifications on your phone. And same on your computer, in other words. And that's a good starting point. And dedicate
those notifications.
Right. I mean, I turned all that stuff off because it's just so distracting.
Absolutely. I've just reinstalled my system here, and all these notifications have come back, and I'm just sitting here just frustrated by it. Like, I'm just noticing it. I've just reinstalled it yesterday or the day before, and I still haven't cleaned them all up. I thought I just turned it all off together, but I don't know how this system works. It's, you know, they somehow get around it. So I've just now have to go in there individually and make sure everyone's switched off. But really good point. Hey, what one bit of advice would you give someone looking to make some change?
If you're passionate about it and you really feel, you have a gut feeling that this is a direction you need to go in, even if there are other people around you naysayers, but you feel very strongly and you're very convinced that you need to move in that direction of change, then you should do it. And it's not always easy.
No,
it's not always easy.
That's exactly the advice I'd need right now, actually, for a number of different reasons. But it is really profound advice. Why do you think that's so important, that advice?
I think people need to be more confident in trusting themselves.
Yeah.
And the book helps people become more confident because we talk also about the concept of social influence, another Robert Cialdini area. And by the way, I might add, I was very honored to have Dr. Robert Cialdini write an endorsement for perceptual intelligence too. But the reason why there's so much social influence with people, or the halo effect, for example, with celebrities, or just you're in a group of people and a lot of people are doing something and you are feeling compelled to do what everyone else is doing, and you may not know if it's right or wrong, but because other people are doing it, you're going with the flow. That's because a lot of people don't have well-developed self-confidence. And when you don't have that well-developed self-confidence, you look for cues from those around you on what you should do. And recognizing that then gives you more power to be able to evaluate and determine if this is really something you should be doing, even though everyone else is doing it, or should you be doing something different despite that everyone else is doing it?
Yeah. No, good advice. A couple of fun questions. What's your favorite food?
I love guacamole.
Favorite leisure activity?
Probably just watching some TV.
Have you got a favorite book you'd like to recommend?
I would say I really like Robert Cialdini's Influence that you mentioned earlier.
Yep. And do you have a favorite quote?
Ben Franklin is one of my idols. And he has a great quote, which I think is so applicable these days with all of the behavior that's getting vetted out in the media with sexual misconduct and the accusations. And his quote applies to just everything in life in terms of how to live your life without getting in major trouble, I should say, which is never do anything you wouldn't want on the front page of the newspaper.
Yeah.
Or more specifically these days, on the front page of the New York Times.
Good quote. And do you believe we'll have a why?
Do I believe we'll have a what?
A why, a purpose.
Oh, yes, I believe we're here to do good and to help people.
And what does living life with passion and purpose mean to you?
It means knowing that you're here for a reason. And when you find that reason, for me, it's helping people, whether it's being a doctor, solving people's problems with keratoconus, or discolored eyes, or vision problems, or it's helping people through the book Perceptual Intelligence, be able to understand how to be better decision makers in life to improve their life.
Yeah.
when you find what you're passionate about and why you're here, I believe everybody's here for a reason.
Yeah.
And when you find that, then you know you have purpose.
Yeah.
And then everything falls into place at that point.
So my final question I want to ask you, it's a new question. It's really about, you know, for you personally, what is the underlying motivation to everything you do? What do you feel is the source that drives you forward, the goal that gets you out of bed every day?
I'm here to help people. Yeah. I'm here to... And I believe I was given gifts, certain gifts, to help people in the ways that I'm helping people.
Yeah.
And I know that I'm here for that reason. Example, when I developed these keratoconus procedures, everybody in the field was doing cornea transplants for keratoconus. And I developed a non-invasive way to strengthen the cornea, for example, without surgery. And I had bitter attacks from other doctors, even people who were my colleagues, because I was, you know, lecturing and presenting papers, and I had people attacking me because, as it turned out, I found out later, I was threatening the income they were making from doing invasive cornea transplants. So what guided me through this very dark time, I was actually invited to give a TEDx talk on it, and people can look it up on YouTube by searching my name, Boxer Walkler, and TEDx, Brian Boxer Walkler TEDx. It's there on YouTube. And I told my story of how I went through some pretty dark times, but I never gave up and I never caved into the peer pressure of my colleagues, because I knew what I was doing was the right thing, because it was to help people and to better people's lives. And in the end, it was vindicated what I was doing. And you know, Stephen Holcomb, I talked about him in the beginning of our talk, and he came back after his keratoconus treatments with me and won the Olympic gold medal for the United States the first time in 62 years. So, you know, these were all things that after got validated and vindicated. But when you find you have that purpose, then nothing will shake you from it.
Yeah, I agree. Mate, look, I don't know if you can hear that noise in the background. It sounds like a chopper's just landed next to me. I've got some roadworks happening here at the moment. But okay. It's probably a good chance to wrap this up. I really appreciate you coming on the show and appreciate your time as well. I want to just encourage the audience again to jump on to thehiddenwhy.com and check out the links. I'll put the links into your website and to the book as well, so they can pick up a copy and have a read. It sounds like an insightful read. So guys listening out there, please check it out at thehiddenwhy.com, episode 514. Brian, is there any other final thoughts you want to mention?
Just to say, we touched a little bit on the chapter on sex. It is an amazing chapter, and do get the book now on Amazon or anywhere books are sold.
Yeah, cool stuff. Guys, thank you for tuning in. Until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. See you soon. So there you have it, guys, my interview with Dr. Brian. How did you enjoy that? Did you find some value in it? Let me know what you think, guys. Jump onto thehiddenwhy.com. Always love your feedback, always love your comments, so jump on there and leave your comments. This is episode 514 with Dr. Brian, so you can find the show notes there. Support the show by using all the links within the show notes, so picking up the copies of the books using the Amazon links to do all your Amazon shopping, that always helps support the show. You can also leave us a review on iTunes, that is a great way to support the show. Other than that, guys, I'd love to connect with you, so reach out to me, let me know what you think about the show, let me know what your thoughts are, your questions that you might have, any suggestions that you might have for the show. Certainly would love to connect. The best way to do that is through the social media platforms, preferably Facebook, or you can reach me on my email address as well. Now, guys, I've worked on a book for quite some time and been talking about it for a while too. It will be published this year. You can support me with that by jumping on over to theultimatelifemap.com. The Ultimate Life Map is the name of the book, so theultimatelifemap.com. And have a look at the information there. If it's of interest, put in your email address and subscribe so I can keep you posted on the launch of that book. For those of you who are joining me there, you might get some free giveaways, etc., when that does launch. So check it out for me, support me on that mission. And other than that, guys, just continue supporting The Hidden Why. I hope you love what I'm producing here. I hope it's giving you some value. It gives me heaps of value, so I hope it does the same for you. Until next time, go out there, breathe more passion into every single moment. Do everything with greater purpose, and in doing so, discover your hidden why. This is The Hidden Why. My name is Lee Martin Woodsy, signing out. See ya. Yeah, 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 yeah.